each attempt gets me closer. Reframing isn't lying to yourself. It's choosing a perspective that empowers you instead of paralyzes you. Think of it like adjusting the lens on your camera. Same scene, better focus. Number four, take micro actions that prove it wrong. One of the fastest ways to challenge a belief is to act in spite of it. If you believe, "I'm not confident speaking up," try asking a question in a meeting. Tiny actions stack up, and each time you do the thing you thought you couldn't, that belief loses its power. Number five, borrow someone else's belief. When your self-belief is shaky, lean on someone who sees you clearly. A coach, a friend, a mentor, someone who's rooting for you. Ask them, "What do you see in me that I might be missing?" Sometimes we need to borrow confidence until we can build our own. Limiting beliefs are just old stories, and luckily, you're the author. You can revise the narrative anytime. To share encouragementology with a friend who needs to know they're not alone in this journey of self-discovery, you can visit encouragementology.com or anywhere you stream your content to receive this episode and all others. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram for additional encouragement throughout the week. So I challenge you. Identify one area in your life where fear or complacency has kept you confined. Take a deliberate step this week to push beyond that boundary, no matter how small, and embrace the growth that awaits on the other side. Remember, life begins at the end of your comfort zone. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges.
I stumbled through until the path was clear. That's when I found you.
Howdy, everybody. I'm Rose Maddox, and I'd like to tell you that you're listening to KBOO in Portland, Oregon, the station that I listen to when I'm in the area.
Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience, produced at a different location every week. I'm Ursula Rudenberg.
The United States is just throwing Ukraine under the bus and sacrificing it to another country with a nuclear status. And that sends a very strong signal to all the countries that were thinking about renouncing their nuclear weapons or are thinking of developing their nuclear weapons. That yes, you know, nukes are basically the only thing that will protect you. So it torpedoed the global idea of nuclear disarmament.
Today on Sprouts, Ukrainian journalist Alia Chandra discusses the Budapest Agreement and the little-discussed victim of the White House's decision to align with Russia's position on Ukraine, global nuclear disarmament. Our conversation actually was recorded when the White House first signaled its position on Ukraine, prior to the Ukrainian president to the White House. Ukrainian officials had just refused to agree with the Trump administration on key conditions for continued support, conditions that have been characterized by many simply as a shakedown. Among other conditions, the Trump administration said that Ukraine should transfer 50% of revenues from its mineral extraction, in other words, mining, licenses to the United States, and the Investment Fund for Reconstruction have exclusive power to issue and manage licenses for that mineral extraction, and that the U.S. have the right to first refusal to purchase any of Ukraine's minerals before they can sell them to other countries. Also, the demand for debt repayment for an exaggerated figure of aid that was given to Ukraine, a demand that could be characterized as war reparations from Ukraine as if they were the perpetrators of the war. In fact, Donald Trump called Ukrainian President Zelensky a dictator and falsely accused him of starting Russia's invasion of Ukraine. In the second half of today's shows, we'll get a little bit of fact-checking with a slightly satirical edge to it. But first, Alyashandra looks at consequences to the U.S. stance. She speaks to us from her office in Kyiv, where she is editor-in-chief of the Euromaidan Press, a Ukrainian online English-language newspaper. Of course, I started the conversation by first checking in with people's mood in Ukraine.
Hi there.
Hello. How are you?
Okay. Thank you, Alya.
Was there a strong response in your country? I know you can't generalize for everybody, but in the general feeling in the country, was Trump's statements recently and J.D. Vance's statement recently felt?
Yeah, there was a shock. There was a sense of hopelessness and despair and a lot of anger, of course. Overall, of course, it's just very difficult because, I mean, Ukraine has really suffered and bled over this time. And basically, little by little, Russia has chipped away at a Ukrainian's will to resist. And that's the backdrop for forcing Ukraine into another treacherous peace agreement that will give Russia a chance to rearm.
How bad is the fear level? Does this feel like a doomsday scenario?
Yep, it does. Yeah, basically, just as we say, we're starting to dig a grave for ourselves. And that's much of the atmosphere everywhere. Of course, Trump's ridiculous statements also provoke a feeling of anger. And that's good for climbing out of this grave that we've dug. It all escalated rather quickly. 1 week ago, the situation with the United States was different, and there were still hopes that somehow Trump will take Ukraine's side to help end the war on Ukraine's favor.
There was hope that he would see this as an opportunity to establish himself as a great leader by righting this wrong and using American power to do that.
Well, we were so frustrated with the Biden policy, this fearful hesitation with this constant fear of Russia's escalation. We were paying with this with our own blood. And with Biden's policy, this golden hour of Ukraine's resistance, when our resilience was very high, our willpower was high, and we had a lot of men who were willing to fight in 2022, when Ukraine liberated much of its territory. And after that, this policy of deliberation and hesitation and withholding of much needed aid to Ukraine just resulted in Ukrainians being killed. All of these Ukrainians that did not have equipment, they were lost as a fighting force. And now this has created a lot of discouragement and despair. And while at the very start, we were holding together strong because there was a lot of hope. But then we saw that we're in this by ourselves and this aid is coming very slow. And all of these European and American politicians, they're saying about, oh, we're afraid of Russia escalates. And basically, we lost this chance that we could have had if the West was not endlessly speculating whether Russia will escalate. And it's a great tragedy. While we are bleeding here to death, holding off this force that just wants to destroy us just because it hates us. And I mean, we're here, we're bleeding to death and we can't hold it off much longer. And the West is just trembling and still discussing whether Ukraine should be allowed to strike deep into Russia. And now Trump is saying that Ukraine is guilty for starting this war. I can't even explain. It is just such cynicism. It is great cynicism, and it's very difficult to be here and understand that only we are responsible for whether we survive this nation, and nobody is going to fight for us.
Well, you know, what you're describing is feeling alone, as if this is only your problem, and yet that's not even really true, is it?
It's not only about Ukraine, and that's a big delusion that the West is choosing to believe, that Russia will not attack NATO. Russia is emboldened by its inaction. It is growing increasingly confident that NATO will not respond. You know, I feel like the 2014 Euromaidan, we have this revolution in Kyiv against this dictator, right? Yanukovych, a lot of protests, 3 months of protests, Yanukovych goes fleeing. And then one of my friends who was a professor in politics said, it's not about Ukraine, it's about Russia. And I was thinking like, why? What are you talking about? What does Russia have to do with our protests in Kyiv? Right? Like, that's just absurd. It's us here facing off the riot police. It's our dreams of a better Ukraine. What does Russia have to do with it? And I was really incredulous when I discovered that it was part of a much larger story. It was part of the project of the Kremlin elite's dreams to resurrect the Russian Empire. And when I understood this, gradually I saw our place in a much larger geopolitical struggle. I have the feeling that the people living in Europe and the United States, they're thinking like, oh, what does it have to do with us? Just like I was thinking on Maidan, right? Because I was just not aware of how these geopolitical mechanics actually work.
Trump said, well, there's a nice big ocean between us.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not our problem.
Somehow for America, it is a problem that Russian nuclear missiles can't fly over this ocean. And I guess it's also a problem for the United States about China's growing dominance. They're also separated by an ocean. Basically, the world is just like me in 2014, is just oblivious to the fact that these forces are growing. And if they are not stopped, they will grow and they will unleash on you. You know, this world, it's much more connected than we would care to believe. And every day, the Russians, they're talking about the West as satanic states. They're joking about nuclear strikes on European capitals, joking about nuclear strikes on the United States. Every day, every single day, the Russians are being brainwashed to think that the West is an evil satanic force that is out to get Russia. And the West is oblivious to this, that this is a weapon of war, that this concerns them, that Russia has designated the collective West as an enemy. You know, I think for many years, we in Ukraine, we just could not believe this. We were just laughing away this Russian propaganda. We could not believe that they're really going to come and attack us with such a full-scale invasion. And now the West is absolutely in the same situation. It is choosing to be oblivious to the very obvious facts that this force is growing, and it is clearly stating what its goal is, to battle the satanic West. And you should really take seriously what these people are saying on Russian TV. These are not jokes. This is a political technology to program the Russians into taking action.
If you're inclined to think that Alia might be exaggerating, right now in Kherson, which is a city in the east, the Russians are literally employing battalions of drones to just pick off random citizens in the streets. So it's a pretty extreme situation.
The locals call it a human safari, yes. And it's just terrible because most of the civilian casualties in Kherson and the near-lying regions is from drones, because the Russians are sending these killer drones to attack civilians just trying to live their life. It's a method of terrorizing the civilian population so it loses its will to resist. You have to understand that their goal is not to occupy some land. Russia does not need land. Russia needs to destroy Ukraine, because Ukraine represents everything that Russia sees so dangerous to itself. A democratic rule where the authorities are responsible before their people and they carry responsibility for their actions. That's the thing that threatens Russia, and that's what the Kremlin leaders are afraid of.
What do you think Russia really wants?
It wants to destroy Ukraine as an independent state. That is its immediate goal. On the ambitions to resurrect its imperial status are laid out very clearly.
Reclaim its Soviet state.
Yes, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Then for that, of course, the Baltics are the next target. So when Trump was elected, the great cardinal of the Kremlin, Vladislav Surkov, released a very cynical article. And it was like, the world is heading into an age of imperialisms.
Say again who Surkov was?
Surkov, as the great cardinal of the Kremlin, he's like a political engineer. He is the creator of so-called managed democracy in Russia, where it's called a democracy, but really only one person wins election. And basically, he's laying out a world where the imperial powers can decide the fates of smaller countries such as Ukraine, who unfortunately were gullible enough to surrender their nuclear weapons and trust other countries that they would protect them. So Russia is restoring its imperial glory, and Trump is acting the same way. So their real ambitions are becoming very clear, to resurrect its imperial status. And another thing I think that needs to be highlighted is, while previously it was only Russia reneging on its pledge to protect Ukraine, but now the second nuclear power that had signed the Budapest Memorandum has also basically caved in and is teaming up with Russia. So I think this is the end of any nuclear containment in the world. It sends a very clear message that if you want to protect your country, nukes are your only option. No other security guarantee will really work.
So to be clear, the Budapest Agreement was, Ukraine had a nuclear arsenal after it left the Soviet Union, and it was asked to give up its nuclear arsenal.
So in 1994, Ukraine was strong-armed by Russia and the U.S. to give up its nuclear arsenal in exchange for security guarantees from the world's nuclear powers, Russia, U.K., and the United States.
And the Budapest Agreement was that if Ukraine's borders would be violated, that there would be consequences.
The countries, Russia, UK, and the United States, guaranteed to protect Ukraine's security against any threat of any nuclear power. So first, it was a big outrage that Russia was using its nuclear status to destroy the country that trusted it when it gave up its nuclear weapons. But now the second country that was nuclear power in the world, that was supposed to be Ukraine's protector, has also joined the campaign of destroying our country for their own personal gain. This sends a very, very strong message to the rest of the world that you cannot trust any guarantees of any nuclear powers, because ultimately it's only each country for itself. And all the plans for nuclear disarmament, they're just going up in smoke because of the United States actions. So we just see that the tragedy of the naivety of expecting that anybody will come for your security.
So what you're saying is that the United States established that agreements don't count.
It torpedoed the global idea of nuclear disarmament. The global idea that we don't need so many nuclear weapons, we can move together towards a world where these weapons are not needed. We can see all of this going up in smoke because the United States that signed up to guarantee Ukraine's safety, it is just throwing Ukraine under the bus and sacrificing it to another country with the nuclear status. And that sends a very strong signal to all the countries that were thinking about renouncing their nuclear weapons or are thinking of developing their nuclear weapons that, yes, you know, nukes are basically the only thing that will protect you.
It also establishes a hierarchy in terms of which countries have status and which don't.
Yes, yes. It's a world where we have fewer ideals of solidarity, much fewer ideals of upholding values like democracy, where we're seeing that superpowers that have nuclear status, they can just decide the fates of smaller countries. And we are also seeing that humanity has learned nothing from the history of the 20th century, that all of these mistakes that led up to the Second World War, of this huge, devastating just wave of destruction, it is repeating word for word, and people are making the same mistakes all over again. Only this time it's Ukraine being sacrificed. International solidarity is something that I don't think we as humanity have really reached.
The point where we agree to protect each other.
Yeah, but reality is that our world is very interconnected. And in 1938, it was Czechoslovakia that was sacrificed. And then look what happened. I mean, we're all connected and we should care about what happens in the world because it might come as a backlash to us.
Alia, thank you. Is there anything that you feel you can say to American people?
American people, you have been really an example and a beacon of democracy for us. I think we Ukrainians, we are somewhat similar to you with our spirit of self-reliance. And we have really looked up to you. Don't let us down this time.
Okay, thank you. You're listening to Sprouts Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of global interest. I'm Ursula Rudenberg. Many thanks to Alia Chandra, editor-in-chief of Euromaidan Press. Euromaidan is an online English-language, independent newspaper to connect Ukrainians to the English-speaking world by reporting on and providing translations of Ukrainian news, expert analysis, and independent research. They can be found at euromaidanpress.com. Euromaidan is spelled Euromaidan. Finally, let's have a little bit of fact-checking. Here's Ukrainian YouTuber Operator Starsky.
Dear friends, I'm Operator Starsky, and this is Fact Check in English. So, US President Trump published a statement in his social media containing a bunch of controversial statements. Why did he do that? Apparently because there's a lot of Russian disinformation surrounding President Donald Trump. And being a big fan of the Western world, I decided to help the beautiful American people learn facts. So let's not waste your precious time and fact check the US President Donald Trump's most recent statements in the social media. In his publication, US President Donald Trump calls the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky a modestly successful comedian, which I'm not even sure if I should fact check for you. Okay, why not? Personally, I prefer Monty Python and Benny Hill. I was never a big fan of Zelensky's shows. However, according to the reports published by the Ukrainian channel OnePlusOne in 2015, approximately 20 million Ukrainians have watched Zelensky's TV show called People's Servant. That is roughly half of Ukraine's population, which I don't even know how to react to, but it's a fact. Additionally, this very TV show topped numerous ratings in Ukraine. Also, the Fox studio in 2016 announced purchasing the format of the show in order to adopt it in the United States of America. Please let me know if you would consider this a modest success in the comedy genre. Next, the US President Donald Trump stated that Volodymyr Zelensky talked the United States of America into spending $350 billion, apparently on helping Ukraine defend itself. How much money have the US spent on helping Ukraine defend itself? In order to answer this enormously complex question, I really had to use some of the most advanced technologies available to the humankind. I mean, of course, I will share it with you, my dear friends, but let's keep it a secret, okay? So I used Google and I learned that, according to the United States Interagency Oversight Group, the US-Ukraine response funding totaled nearly $183 billion. $174.2 billion were appropriated through five appropriation acts enacted between 2022 and 2024. And as you probably understand, these money were spent in the United States, while the weaponry and equipment were delivered to Ukraine in metal, not in cash. Therefore, I'm not really sure where this number of $350 billion came from, because it's even bigger than the combined US and European response budget that was spent on Ukraine's defense. Next, the US president stated that President Zelensky went into a war that couldn't be won and never had to start. Early in the morning of 24th of February 2022, Russian missiles crossed the Russo-Ukrainian border in the direction of Ukraine, not vice versa. I mean, I don't remember a single Ukrainian soldier walking into Russia on that day. Fact is, internationally wanted war criminal Vladimir Putin announced a so-called special military operation and launched the invasion of Ukraine. Zelensky didn't choose to go to war. In fact, the war came to Ukraine and there was absolutely no way to stop it. On the night before the invasion, President Zelensky made a 10-minute long address to the Russians, appealing that the war against Ukraine will bring a lot of blood and suffering to both nations if it starts, and it won't make life any better for the Russian people. In 2022, President Zelensky didn't announce a special military operation against Russia. He didn't annex Russian territory. He didn't call Ukrainian army to cross the Russian border. It was the Russian army that crossed Ukrainian border and started the war. It's a fact that nobody can change. Russia started the war of aggression against Ukraine and invaded the country. And it's obvious that Zelensky starting the war against Russia is not true. Next, President Trump says that the United States has spent $200 billion more than Europe, which again is much more than what was confirmed by the official sources of the US government. According to Ukraine Support Tracker, which is a database of military, financial, and humanitarian aid to Ukraine, As of December 2024, approximately 267 billion euro, or almost 280 billion US dollars, were spent in total by 41 countries of the world supporting Ukraine to help it defend itself against Russia and support the Ukrainian civilians. Therefore, this statement also cannot be confirmed. Next, American President Trump stated that this war is far more important to Europe than it is to us. We have a big, beautiful ocean as separation. In June 2024, three Russian warships and a nuclear submarine with personnel on board have arrived to the Caribbean and docked in Cuba, approximately 145 kilometers or 90 miles away from Florida. The Russian media Gazeta.ru called this act the biggest demonstration of force, obviously reminding the US citizens about the Cuban crisis that took place in the 20th century, and I'm sure a lot of people, including you, my dear viewers, still remember those days. Next, President Trump stated that Zelensky admits that half of the money the US sent him is missing. However, President Trump did not clarify, was he talking about $350 billion that he keeps operating in his interviews, or $170 billion mentioned by President Zelensky in his interview, where he stated that Ukraine never received about $100 billion. Generally speaking, President Trump can easily access all the reports from the USAID and Department of Defense to learn where and how those money were spent. Ukraine obviously doesn't have such possibility, and frankly, we don't really need to have it. We only report on what's happening on our side, which we do. And finally, in his publication, President Trump stated that President Zelensky refuses to have elections and is very low in Ukrainian polls. President Trump also called President Zelensky a dictator. Since President Trump referred to the Ukrainian polls, I checked the most recent polls provided yesterday by the Kyiv International Sociology Institute. The results of the poll indicate that 57% Ukrainians trust Zelensky as of 19th of February 2025. I think you will agree with me that President Trump would be probably happy to have such rating during the US presidential elections of 2024, and I'm sure he has a good potential to reach those numbers. Next, I checked the Ukrainian Constitution. According to Part 4, Chapter 83 of the Constitution of Ukraine, quote, in the event of the expiration of the term of office of the Verkhovna Rada of Ukraine during the state of martial law or emergency, its power shall be extended until the day of the abolition of the state of martial law or emergency. To put it simple, my friends, during the martial law or nationwide emergency in Ukraine, the authority of the Ukrainian parliament is recognized as legitimate until the end of the war. Additionally, Part 2 of Chapter 187 restricts changing this chapter that I mentioned above during the martial law. Also, according to the Ukrainian law on legitimacy of martial law, Part 1, Chapter 19, adopted in 2015, it is stated that under martial law, such actions as amending the Constitution of Ukraine, holding elections of the President of Ukraine, as well as elections to the Verkhovna Rada of Ukraine, as well as holding all Ukrainian and national referendums, are completely prohibited. Therefore, whenever somebody tells you that Ukrainian government or Ukrainian president violated Ukrainian constitution, please don't be lazy and actually read the thing. Here's a different example for you, my friends. The Russian constitution allows Vladimir Putin to rule his country indefinitely, which, by the way, he does for the past 20 years. And the reason for that is that he was actually the one who changed the Russian constitution to be able to rule forever. Therefore, if Putin is considered constitutional, then apparently so is Zelensky. To summarize, I want to quote Ukrainian president who said that he has great respect for President Trump as a leader of American people who always supported us, but unfortunately he lives in the disinformation space, which is nothing new. Everybody lives in the disinformation space. And in my personal opinion, there is absolutely no better way to support your friends than help them learn the truth and share this content to help fight Russian disinformation. I'm Operator Starsky. America and Europe stay strong.
That's it for Sprouts. Many thanks to Operator Starsky for sharing his fact-checking. You can find this and a lot of other news updates, analysis, commentary, historical background, and educational documentaries at his YouTube channel called Operator Starsky. He's a Ukrainian communications expert, veteran, Army reservist, blogger, and co-founder of the Propaganda Study Institute. He was also among the Army reservists who fought off the initial Russian invasion in the early hours in 2022 at the Hostomel airport near Kyiv. Earlier we heard from Alia Chandra, editor-in-chief of the Euromaidan Press, an English-language independent Ukrainian online newspaper which can be found at euromaidanpress.com. Again, Euromaidan is spelled E-U-R-O-M-A-I-D-A-N. Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country and even the world, bringing you local radio productions of global interest. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio Network. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it globally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. That's me, Ursula Rudenberg. I have been your host and producer this week. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Join me, Melissa Lesniak, creator and host of That Vegan Show, this Friday, March 28th at 11 a.m., as I interview Hope Bohanek, the founder and